Glow, I'm Ray Bolin, and welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I have with us today biologist Jonathan Wells to talk about the Darwinian story of land animal to whale. Today we want to focus on the anatomy of whales and what it would take to evolve a land mammal into a functioning whale. Let's start today's podcast, Jonathan, with Darwin himself. He had some ideas about this involving bears, didn't he?
Yes, Darwin, in the first edition of The Origin of Species, wrote that it was conceivable to him that a bear swimming and catching insects could possibly evolve a larger and larger mouth until, as he put it, a creature was produced as monstrous as a whale. That's a quote from the book. Critics made fun of him for this, that a bear could evolve into a whale. So he took it out of subsequent editions, but he still believed it.
Hmm. Well, you need a lot more than just an enlarged mouth to turn a bear or any other land animal into a whale. You need quite a few anatomical changes. So let's start with the features needed for swimming, and then we'll go on to some of the others.
Sure. Well, remember now, whales spend their entire lives in the water. If they come out of the water, they're in danger of dying. A beached whale will die if it's not put back in the water. So in this respect, they're different from all other mammals. Yet they still have to breathe air. So the first thing that stands out to me with a whale is the fluke, or tail. Actually, the tail and the fluke are different. The fluke is at the end of the tail. The fluke itself has no muscles, but there are tendons that connect it to special muscles in the tail. So the whale can use the fluke independently of its tail. The fluke is not a passive flipper like a fish's fin would be, or the flipper on a scuba diver. It's an active organ that moves up and down to propel the whale very efficiently through the water. And studies have shown that the flukes are actually more efficient than humanly engineered airplane wings in providing lift to propel the whale.
That is pretty amazing. So what I hear you saying is that the whale's fluke isn't just an appendage that acts, say, like a paddle when you're paddling the canoe. It actually has dynamic function that's independent, in some ways, at least, from the tail.
That's correct. It's very different from a flipper. The other thing that whales have that makes them unique is the dorsal fin, unique among mammals, that is. The dorsal fin helps the whale to keep itself oriented in the water and not roll from side to side. So those are two different features of whales that are not found in land animals.
Okay, so what about breathing? Fish breathe by using their gills to obtain oxygen directly from the water. But whales are mammals, so they need to breathe essentially like we do, using lungs. So whales just need to come up for air, like seals and sea turtles, right? But that's not right, is it?
Well, it's true, but it's not the whole story. As everyone knows, whales have nostrils on the tops of their heads called blowholes. They're called blowholes because as the whale surfaces, the whale expels moisture-laden air from the blowhole to make a spout. Then the whale has to breathe very quickly before it goes back underwater. Now, the blowhole is not just a nostril. It's actually a reverse nostril. All other mammals have nostrils that are normally open and require an effort to close. But the blowhole of a whale is normally closed, and the whale has to use special muscles to open it as it surfaces for breathing. So that's the first noticeable thing about the breathing.
Well, they do have to dive down pretty deep, and that requires some additional changes. I mean, they have to go quite a long time then without any breath of air. So how does that get accomplished?
Yes, well, that's true. And the first thing to note about diving deeply is that the bone structure is inadequate to resist the pressure at great depths. Now, sperm whales can dive to 2,000 meters. Beaked whales can dive to almost 3,000 meters. And with each 10 meters of depth, the pressure increases one atmosphere, an atmosphere being the pressure we experience at the surface. So a beaked whale is experiencing 300 times the pressure that we experience when we stand on the surface of the Earth. So since the skeleton cannot withstand that kind of pressure, whales have collapsible lungs, collapsible rib cages. As they dive, the rib cage actually collapses. The ribs are not connected the way they are in our bodies. And the lung collapses and expels all the air from it. Seals and sea lions also have collapsible lungs. And the other interesting feature about them is that whereas our diaphragm is perpendicular to the spinal cord, in whales and sea lions and seals, the diaphragm is more nearly parallel to the spinal cord. So it can sort of squeeze the air out of the lungs and flatten them completely. Not only is this important because of the depth and the pressure, but as human divers know, if you stay down too long and you have air under pressure, your body's blood absorbs nitrogen. And when you come back up to the surface, that nitrogen can bubble up out of the blood and cause a potentially fatal disease called the bends. So whales don't have that problem because they have expelled all their air and collapsed their lungs.
Well, if the whale's lungs can completely collapse when it reaches the deepest part or deepest point of its dive, well, how does it get back to the surface when there's no air left?
Well, for one thing, whales are unusually efficient in shutting down their metabolism. Instead of supplying blood to their external extremities so much, they tend to shunt it to the heart and the brain, and their metabolic rate goes way down. So they conserve oxygen. They also have more of a chemical in their muscles called myoglobin, which stores oxygen, than we have. But when they come back to the surface, they have another problem. When a lung collapses, sometimes it doesn't reinflate right away. The tissue sticks together. So whales have special chemicals in their lungs called surfactants that are unlike the surfactants in animals such as us and are specially designed, it appears, to enable the lung to reinflate rapidly when the whale surfaces.
The story gets more amazing the more we listen to you. So now our whale can swim, it can breathe, but we still need to help whales reproduce. They can't seem to just carry their reproductive equipment straight over from the land right into the water. There's something else more involved.
There is much more involved. For one thing, with the males, most male mammals carry their testicles outside the body because sperm in most mammals forms only below body temperature. Well, whales have testicles inside the body, and normally this would make them too warm to produce sperm, and the whales would be sterile. Of course, if that were true, they would be an evolutionary dead end. So whales have a special system around their testicles. It's called a countercurrent heat exchanger. And the way it works is cool blood from the dorsal fin and the flukes, been cooled by contact with the seawater, that cooled blood is shunted toward the testicles. And vessels carrying the cool blood flow in between the arteries from the heart carrying warm blood. So the cool blood from the flukes and the dorsal fin, that cool blood cools the warm arterial blood before it gets to the testicle and thereby keeps the testicle below body temperature. What's amazing is if the whale doesn't have that system, then with internal testicles it'll be sterile. But why would it develop that system before bringing the testicles inside the body? It's a chicken and egg problem, and it's not easily explained by Darwinian evolution.
So it's a situation where until the mammal is fully aquatic, it's got to have that system already in place. But before it's fully aquatic, it doesn't need that system, is what you're basically saying.
That's right. The two go together.
Wow.
It's not a simple system, the countercurrent heat exchange.
Well, it seems that between swimming, breathing, reproducing, we're talking about a full array of anatomical machinery needed to launch this fully marine mammal. And do they have any good detailed stories for the evolution of any of these incredible features?
Not really. The stories they have are like those written by Rudyard Kipling many, many years ago. He called them just-so stories. How the leopard got its spots, how the camel got its hump, and so on. And they were for kids, you know, entertaining, imaginative stories about how these things happened. When you get right down to it, the Darwinian stories are not much better. By the way, about reproduction, I only spoke about the males. But females also have to have certain adaptations to do their job in the water. One is the whale calf has to come out tail first. On land, mammals give birth head first so the baby can breathe, but whales do it the other way around. Also, when the mother nurses, the baby can't stay underwater for very long, and the mother can't nurse out of the water. So the mother has special nipples that inject the milk into the calf at great force, like a fire hose. Mm. And the milk is also much thicker than the milk of land animals. It's more like liquid yogurt. So this way, the mother can nurse the baby in very short periods of time so the baby doesn't drown in the meantime.
Once again, absolutely amazing. So thank you so much, Dr. Wells. And for ID the Future, this is Ray Bolin, and thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.